This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, good morning, good friends, and good morning throughout the Midwest. As I sit here in our studios in Huntley, Illinois, off I-90, I'm looking at a brightening sky in the east, the temperature at 58. You know what? Perfect day for going to a dairy farm, and that's what we're going to be doing in about 2.5 hours. We'll talk more about that throughout the morning. Before I do anything else, though, I do want to send out special greetings and good morning wishes to some very nice people, WGN early morning listeners, that Gloria and I met Thursday night at the Anvil Club in Dundee at the opening of their outdoor veranda. Quite a few folks there who came over to say, yeah, we're with WGN every morning. So thank you for that. And thank you for joining us here every Saturday morning between 5 and 6. Max Armstrong, who has another commitment today that keeps him away from the dairy farm in Hampshire, Illinois, we'll be sitting down with a young market advisor who has a pretty good grip and concept of what's going on in the markets, Joe Camp. That'll be happening just a little bit later. And Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack came to the Midwest this week, to Indiana, to Fair Oaks on I-65 between Chicago and Indianapolis. We'll get his reaction to the opening of yet another educational program at Fair Oaks Farm in the Hoosier State. So a lot going on, and we started, of course, in the summertime with Jim Fizell. We'll get to our visit with Jim when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Jim Fizell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture, good morning to you. And are the things growing well in the garden, sir?
You know, we've had a really good stretch of gardening weather here. We've had some warm temperatures and we've had some moisture. Been a good stretch, and things should be doing about as well as ever right now. And by the looks of things, it should be pretty good from now on out, at least for the foreseeable future. Before I get too far into the gardening thing, you know, gardening's the number one hobby in this country, and we know that a lot of dads do garden. And it's especially after the kids have gotten older and they don't have that responsibility. But a lot of retirees, in fact, when I go to garden centers, visit around, I find that there are just a lot of guys around there that are as interested in gardening as some of the younger housewives are, some of the younger ladies. Anyway, it's Father's Day, and there's some things you can do to help your dad out if he's a gardener, if he's not a gardener anyway. One of the things you could do is go out and mow the lawn for him so he can do something else. Have a neighbor down the street that puts one of his recliners out in his front yard. He sits out there and smokes a cigar, believe it or not. That's what he does after he gets home from church on Sunday. Well, then, of course, he's got to put it away so he can cut the grass. But if they had the grass cut for him, he wouldn't have to worry about that. Or you could edge the lawn for him or surprise him by hoeing out the weeds in the garden. That's a chore that all of us do. Arrange to take an outing with him to the Botanic Garden or the Arboretum, or you might even get a membership to one of those two places or some of the other places in this vicinity, and there are many gardening arboreta and so forth. Get a gift certificate to his favorite garden store or hardware store. Anyway, we wish all you dads a happy Father's Day and enjoy it. Now for the garden problems. You know, we've had a lot of wet weather, good for making things grow, but it can cause some problems as well. Noticed out there that a lot of the apple trees and crab apple trees have bloomed just absolutely gorgeously, but they've lost their leaves now, and that's because of apple scab. That's a fungus disease that shows up when we have a moist season as we are having now. And one of the things we can do to solve that problem is to use resistant varieties. There are a lot of hybridizers that are working on creating resistant varieties of crab apples. They flower gorgeously, but they don't lose their leaves in spring and summer because of apple scab. If you do have it already, Bordeaux mixture will control that scab, but it really needs to be put on early if you can. and continue until the wet weather's over with, every maybe 10 days. Bordeaux mixture will work, Manco Zeb will work, and so forth. Leaf spots in general. We grow vines on our in our backyard that actually are from Wrigley Field. We keep kind of tabs on what's happening to them. So, that it's interesting. But the reason we do it is so that when something happens on our vines, we know what's happening over there, and we call up and say, hey, the leaf spot started or the Japanese beetles have started. Go out and take care of it. Anyway, most of the leaf spots can be prevented early by keeping moisture off the foliage. Of course, if it rains, there's nothing you can do about that. You don't want to work in the garden until the leaves dry off, for one thing, because that just spreads it around. But once you have it, then you need to protect the new leaves, copper, as I mentioned before, the Bordeaux mixture, or thiophanate methyl, which is sold as Fertilome Halt, works very well in protecting the new foliage. If your older leaves have spots on them already, there's nothing you can do about that. They're going to have the spots. That's the way it is. They may just drop off, and the new leaves cover up so you don't see it anymore. Roses, of course, black spots a problem there. Keep the leaves dry when you irrigate. Water the ground, not the plant. And triforine, which is a specific black spot fungicide for roses. Now, one other thing that's happening, a lot of the sycamore trees have had a tough time getting leaves, and they're dropping leaves as they occur. This is a disease called anthracnose, sycamore anthracnose. It occurs when we have cool weather and moisture. Now, the disease occurred earlier this season, but we're seeing the results because these leaves that were affected are now falling off, and it looks like fall under some of these trees. Nothing you can do about it except wait for the warm weather and for the new leaves to come out, and that will solve the problem. Now, going out and looking at trees, and, you know, people call and say, I got holes in the leaves in my trees. Come on out, take a look and see what's out here. Well, incidentally, a lot of times it's nothing out there. And if you think back a month or so to the middle of May, we had a frost in a lot of our area. Leaves were just coming out, and those parts that were just partly out and were tender were frozen. So the leaf continued to expand, but that part that was frozen fell out. So you have a hole in the leaf. Don't need to do anything about it. This is particularly evident in outlying areas, about out where you live, Orion. There's a lot of it. Closer to the lake, we just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with wet weather, we have other things that happen, and what's happening right now are the wet weather bugs like earwigs. These are these things with the pinchers on the back. They're coming along, and they will just absolutely eat the foliage on a lot of kinds of plants. Seven, carbaryl will work if you dust the plants with that. It'll solve the problem. One other thing that makes holes in leaves is our friends, the slugs.
Stale beer will do it, huh?
That will do it. Stale beer in a pan set out will attract them. But you have to get out in the morning to collect them and pour them out before they sober up and go home.
Okay.
Or use snail bait. That works as well. The last thing I want to mention is with the water that we've had, you need to be very careful because when you have this much moisture, you get excellent drainage, excellent percolation. So when the moisture stops, the soil is going to dry out very quickly. If you have plants that are wilting, even though it rained 4 days ago, you might check to make sure they're not dry, and if they are, you need to moisten them. Dig down a little bit before you do any watering to see if they're wet or dry. Be prepared to water if you need to, an inch a week if the plants begin to wilt. Anyway, summer's here. It's hot. It's sunny. It's great. What a great time of year. This is what we wait all winter for. So get out in your garden and enjoy it.
All right. Well, you have a happy Father's Day, young man.
And you too, Orion.
Okay. Jim Fazell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. Coming up on 22 minutes after 5 on this Saturday morning, life on a dairy farm starts very early. It'll certainly start on the Drendel Dairy Farm, Lindale Holstein's, a lot before 6 o'clock. But at 6 o'clock, they'll open the farm gates, and you'll be able to see cows being milked, and you'll be able to see what it takes to run a modern dairy farm today. I'll bet your 5-year-old kid would love to sit in the seat of a big 4-wheel drive tractor. You can do that. It's all a part of agriculture's ongoing campaign to help people now seven generations removed from the farm understand what it takes to put food on the table, to put clothes on their back, a roof over their head, and now energy in the tank. And this week, Fair Oaks Farms in Indiana, that's the nation's largest agritourism destination, added a new exhibit about how crops are grown. The farm at the border of Newton and Jasper Counties, Indiana, off Interstate 65 between Chicago and Indianapolis, has, of course, had a dairy adventure where you can visit and see cows being milked, and then they added the pig adventure so you can see how pork is produced. Well, they have now added the crop adventure, the Winfield crop adventure. They did that with a grand opening this week. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was there and offered his thoughts on this new venture to help educate people.
Listen, this is a tremendous new adventure that agriculture is on. Land O'Lakes and the Winfield folks have come together to create this Crop Adventure Center. I've taken a tour of it. I learned a lot as I went through it, and I just got incredibly excited about the opportunity that it will create to partner with what the folks at Fair Oaks have done on the pork and dairy side. To educate people who will be traveling here as a destination or just on their way and saying to themselves, I wonder what this is all about. They will learn the incredible story of American agriculture. And this is a huge commitment by Land O'Lakes to invest in this, because I think Chris and the folks at Land O'Lakes genuinely believe this is a story that needs to be told in a way that can speak to the 98-99% of America that does not farm, and the 98% of America that are several generations removed from anyone in their family who was a farmer or who had contact with the land. It's a story that tells the importance of the land and good stewardship. It's a story that tells the need for economic sustainability, and within the Fair Oaks complex, it's a story that also talks about the care and well-being of animals. And I think it presents a more typical view of what American agriculture does and is than is often portrayed in other venues. And so I'm excited to be here, very appreciative of what Land O'Lakes has done, and really appreciate Chris's leadership, because he has been among the most vocal ag leaders on this topic.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack at Fair Oaks Farms in Indiana this week. He wasn't able to get away before a reporter asked him about any progress in Congress on a National Food Labeling Act and trade agreements. This was his response.
Well, I talked to Senator Roberts and briefly to Senator Stabenow about the labeling issue. I know those two senators are working hard. They need help from their colleagues in the Senate, frankly. This is not an issue that lends itself to ideology. It doesn't lend itself to my way or the highway kind of thinking. It does lend itself potentially to a compromise that recognizes the need for consumers to have information, but to get it in a way that doesn't disparage the product. And that's the key. And it's always been the key. So my hope, we've offered technical assistance. We'll continue to provide assistance and help. My hope is that those senators continue to work hard and eventually get to a point where their colleagues will see the wisdom of a national comprehensive approach, as opposed to essentially allowing states and individual companies to make these decisions. Not with all due respect to states making these decisions, it will create a hodgepodge of various labeling schemes that will create uncertainty in the market, will create potentially higher costs and or lack of supply, and certainly isn't the way. If you sit down and talk to folks who are reasonable, everybody understands we need a national standard. On the trade issue, I continue to remain optimistic. I will tell you that I think agriculture has done an incredibly good job of advocating for trade and the importance and benefits of trade. Candidly, I think other industries within the United States need to pick it up, as agriculture has, so that folks understand that this is about job creation. This is about wealth creation. So often people do not realize, as consumers, they have incredible choice and less expensive goods, in part because of trade. So the benefits of trade, I don't think, have been as well articulated by some, and I think agriculture has done a great job, and I think if every other industry that benefits from trade would do as good a job as agriculture, then I'd be very confident that we'll eventually get the right decision from Congress.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack speaking at Fair Oaks Farms in Fair Oaks, Indiana. June, besides Dairy Month, there's the Hay and Forage Expo. That comes up next Wednesday and Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday, 22nd and 23rd, Boone, Iowa. June is also the month for state FFA conventions. Illinois FFA held its annual convention. Our congratulations to the new slate of officers. J.C. Campbell from Little York is the new FFA president in Illinois. Paxton Morse of El Dorado is vice president. Zach Becker of Amboy is reporter. Corrine Harding of Farmington, Illinois, is secretary, and Cody Suddeth of Stewart, Illinois, is the treasurer of the Illinois FFA. And in Wisconsin, they also held their annual convention this week, and there they elected the lady who served as Sentinel last year for the state FFA, and her name is Brenna Bays of the Adams Friendship FFA. She was elected president of the 2016-17 Center. So a lot of other state FFAs as well, and a lot of state, Wisconsin particularly, June Dairy Month breakfast this morning. And, of course, we have the one here in Illinois that we'll talk about a little bit later. They're up and milking already at the Lindale Holstein Farm, about 10 miles from where I'm located at the moment. They're in Hampshire, Illinois. And we'll be heading there at 8 o'clock. We'll be there by 8 o'clock and look forward. Remember, the focus here is to see a modern dairy farm and to learn more the care and the concern that those owners and operators of livestock farms have from the standpoint of rations, from the standpoint of care for the animals that produce milk and all of the other dairy products. And it's secondary that Steve and Johnny will be there with their book on Les Paul, and I'll be there with my book, You Can't Dream Big Enough, and we'll have Max's book, Memories of the Heartland. He cannot be with us, but we'll be there from 8 to 10:30 this morning. And where it's 58 degrees at our studios in Huntley, Illinois right now, and let me see, 25 minutes they'll open the farm gates at the Lindale Holstein Farm at Hampshire, Illinois, and you can enjoy breakfast on the farm. Not every day, Roger, I'll bet that you get ice cream for breakfast.
You know,
that will be part of the menu today.
I could go for ice cream for breakfast. It's milk.
That's right. Good anytime.
Anytime.
And if it's going to get as warm as they say, it'll be a cooling end to the breakfast.
As long as they got enough for everybody.
They will, yes. Right. We'll be heading there in about an hour, but some other things to do this morning. We're going to talk markets as Max sits down with Joe Camp of AgriVisor to talk about the market reaction to weather this early in the crop year. I should know by now, after 55 years of covering grain markets at the Chicago Board of Trade, that weather can impact the market any time, but it's been interesting to see it this early in the growing season. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion Samuelson to share some thoughts with you on common sense. Yes, it has disappeared. This is sponsored by Wayne Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. And the folks at Wink Products want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. That means products that really work. And Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, but also on color fast fabrics and carpets. The little brown bottle has been around since 1947, and it's still number one. Now, to learn where to find quality Wink products, go online, check them out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Now, what has happened to common sense?
Do you remember when the majority of people in this country seemed to have common sense? I do, but it's been a couple of decades now that I think common sense has gone out the window. It has disappeared. When you look at some of the happenings in the world and in this country, how can you think otherwise? For example, there is an incident in the Northeast that's gotten a lot of attention. I've received many emails asking me to talk about it because people are upset by this one. So let me share with you an email description of what's causing all the fuss. In July of 2015, a couple from Woodbridge, Connecticut, was traveling west on a Vermont highway when they struck and killed a large Scottish Highlander bull that had escaped from its pasture, according to the Vermont State Police. The driver, a 64-year-old man, was killed. His wife was injured but recovered. It was an awful accident. Now it's a crime. According to this email, animal escapes are a part of rural life. Accidents as serious as this, as rare as they are, terrible. A tree had fallen on the fence where the bull was being pastured, lifting it up enough for him to escape. Now, Rose Kennedy, a local prosecutor, has decided there is no such thing as an accident when it comes to animals. Last month, the grand jury, at her urging, indicted the bull's owner on criminal charges of involuntary manslaughter. And Craig Mosher, if convicted, faces up to 15 years in prison. If that happens, the lives of every farmer and animal lover will be altered dramatically and much for the worse. It is a truly horrific precedent, a terrible accident, whether you own a bull, a cow, a dog, or a cat. Well, charging somebody with involuntary manslaughter because a bull got out, caused a terrible accident, I don't think that's common sense, saying he should be charged with involuntary manslaughter a year later. But that's the case, and it's one to watch. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 20 minutes before 6. Max Armstrong standing by in the studio with Joe Camp to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
In the studio with us this weekend from AgriVisor, Bloomington, Illinois, Joe Camp. Joe, things have gotten a little more interesting over the past 6 to 8 weeks in the grain market. What are farmers saying to you when they call in the office? Give us an example of what the conversation goes like now, Joe.
What a difference a couple of months make. This spring is almost a mere opposite of what we saw this winter. And so throughout the winter months, the farmer calls certainly were a little bit pessimistic. And in some cases, you know, we'd get the calls and we'd say, oh, this thing's going to continue to go lower. All the analysts think so. It's a bear market. I don't know how we're going to make do this year. Attitudes have certainly changed with this recent rally. If we talk about from the beginning of spring up until now, March 1 to the spring peak for soybeans, $3.50 of gains for futures, about a buck for corn. That's a big difference. And so the attitude a little bit rosier now, no doubt.
And now at this stage, it's all about weather, isn't it?
It is all about weather now that we've got the row crops planted and we're into the growing season. And at the start, you know, we got through planting season really rather well. There were some delays in the east with some wet weather, but the crops are in the ground. And at the start, things look to be going well, although we came into last week and had some concerns about this hot, dry weather that was on the weather maps. We have been hot, but we did get some rains here midweek, and that helped take some pressure off of the market, at least to the upside there. we're going to have to watch still going forward. The map's still leaning a little bit warm. There's about an equal chance as far as precipitation is concerned for the new long-range maps. And so going forward, we'll keep a close eye on it. And to pair some early season worries with this chatter about La Nina potential, that certainly keeps the speculators a little bit bulled up here regarding weather.
If you look at the weekly drought monitor maps, there are pockets, small ones. There's one along the Michigan-Indiana state line. There's another one in south-central Iowa. There's one down toward southwest Missouri, the west half of South Dakota. That's generally not the crop-producing area, but the Black Hills, I know they're in drought. Really, though, there is not much showing up on the drought monitor map from that standpoint. If you look at that particular barometer, and especially comparing it with what we saw in 2012 when it was all lit up in red.
Right. Those regions you mentioned that have some little pockets of dryness, the drought monitor classifies those as abnormally dry. We don't have in the Corn Belt any areas that have reached that classification, you know, quote unquote, moderate drought yet. But those little pockets can expand, so we'll keep an eye particularly on that little patch there in southeastern Iowa and down in Missouri, because really the heart of the Corn Belt, if that spreads any further and intensifies, we'll have some worry.
The pendulum really swung rather dramatically for some growers. I know, for example, some of my friends in southwestern Indiana who couldn't plant because it was way too wet, and now it's extremely dry for them.
It is. It's a quick turn, but that's spring in the Midwest. That's how it goes. And so because we are leaning a little bit dry now that we've got the crop in, and in some regions there's going to be that concern. But all it takes really for this market to take notice and have a little bit of a change in attitude is just a couple of days of good rains and maybe for that temperature to moderate just a little bit.
And really, if you look at the weekly crop bulletins, there doesn't appear to be much of a problem now.
No, the condition ratings starting out are really phenomenal, but the traders seem to be shrugging that off. Really, we would look at those on a regular basis and probably put a little bit more importance in those numbers than we need to. But this year, that's not the case. We're not so concerned. It's just too early yet to have that data from the crop watchers mean a whole lot. But get a little further into the season, and those will start to play a bigger role.
A few weeks ago, there was a little bit of concern about what the Federal Reserve might do at its June meeting, about whether they would raise interest rates. And then that June employment report came out and seemed to calm those fears a bit. Their meeting turned out to be pretty much a non-event, didn't it, Joe?
That's right. There is some heightened volatility, though, because while there won't be a June rate hike, it's still on the table, and the central bankers are becoming a little bit more hawkish, and they indicate that we could still have two more interest rate hikes, just a quarter of a percent here, but still those would be enough to probably put the bid back under the dollar. We're seeing a little bit of a stronger dollar here in the recent couple of days, and that, broadly speaking, is going to be a negative for the commodity space and grains in particular. That, of course, weighs a little bit on our trade prospects. So that's something we're going to watch really closely.
Crude oil. Talk about the recent movement there and what that means to grains.
That's a big deal, because if we talk about the change in attitude from winter to summer, that plays a big part, because when we were coming in each morning during the winter months, we were seeing crude oil off a dollar or off a dollar 50 and continually making new contract lows. That's not the case. We've rallied back up to the $50 mark. And what that has done is allowed speculators to take on a little bit more of a risk-on attitude, bring some money back into the commodity space, and the grains are benefiting from that. It looks like we're taking the edge a little bit off of that recent oil price rally, because it had been pretty sharp from what was the bottom here this winter. But all things considered, it looks like production certainly is coming down and demand is really responding to that winter of low prices. So if we have a good summer driving season, we're going to keep oil prices elevated, relatively speaking, and that'll be a friendly driver for commodities and again, the grains included.
Is anybody in the grain trade, Joe, talking about Brexit, that vote of Great Britain on whether or not they want to exit the European community?
We are, because what that means is simply heightened volatility for the outside financial markets, for stocks and bonds and currencies. particularly for currencies. I mentioned the dollar coming up a little bit. First on ideas that we could see an interest rate hike sooner than we anticipated. Second on ideas that if the British leave the eurozone, that their pound will drop against the dollar, and that other currencies, the euro, might as well. And so that dollar strength, that prospect for a higher dollar, again, leans negative for commodities, generally speaking.
Talking a little bit about exports, how have they been here of late? As we've watched what's been happening, and especially as prices have rallied, what role have the exports played, if any?
Exports late season have been surprisingly strong and have been much better than we anticipated throughout the winter months. That was part of the doom and gloom, was that demand was weak, and mostly on the part of exports. But exports are coming up, for one, because we have that crop loss in South America. A wet Argentina reduced the size of the soybean crop. A dry Brazil cut second corn crop production. That brings business back to the United States. And late in the season, we're seeing that with the estimates starting to tick up. USDA in the June report upping export targets for both corn and soybeans. So very good strength late in the season has been a price-friendly motivator.
Let's switch gears a little bit to talk about wheat. Reports coming in from the wheat fields of southern Kansas indicate very fine yields, the best in years. A nationwide wheat yield, I believe, on the winter wheat of better than 50 bushels. That's not at all encouraging for the price of wheat, is it?
No, it's not. We wonder, though, if two things can offset the negativity related to yield, and one, that's lower winter wheat acres that were seeded this year, and two, have prices already gone low enough to where buyers are going to step in, both from the commercial side and the speculative side. Certainly with wheat this cheap, we could feed some more of it, maybe even up to 50% more than, say, we had in recent years. That would be a friendly influence for wheat if that were to occur. And then second, maybe a few issues abroad with the European crop coming down a little bit, exports, quality issues in France. The price just being as low as it is and as low as it is relative to corn should beget higher demand going forward. So even though we have a very outstanding yield potential, maybe not overly bearish for prices at this time.
Some of the reports coming in from elevators there tell us the protein content of that wheat is not very good. Test weights have been fantastic. We heard one report better than 66 pounds on a test weight of wheat. Have you been hearing those kinds of reports too, Joe?
Very good reports from the winter wheat harvest, the early start there, especially in the Great Plains, where at the, you know, the start of development, we were worried about dry weather, and all of a sudden they received just an abundance of precipitation that really helped fill that crop out. But with excess water comes some quality issues in some sense. So we'll keep an eye on that as we go through the harvest here.
You mentioned acreage of wheat just a moment or so ago. Are you formulating your ideas already at AgriVisor about corn and bean acres? And are you thinking as high as some people might be, up around 85 million acres on soybeans?
That report is quickly approaching. The June 30th acreage report accompanies the big stocks report, so we're looking out for a very big end of the month, even though we started with a big start of June. We're thinking that corn acres could drop 1 to 1.5 million acres and that soybeans would grow about the same. We're not in the camp that we would see a considerable jump in soybean acres. The idea is that maybe some wet weather in the east had led to some switches. I think the price change came a little bit late. Farmers did want to plant corn, and they did. But the price structure and just some slight weather issues lead us to believe we'll see some sort of switch here, maybe a million to a million and a half.
Joe, it must be a little more fun coming into the office these mornings than it was back in January, as you had to listen to your office mate Dale Durkos grousing some of those mornings.
It's a much more fun trade day when we come in. And again, we don't have this this type of morning where oil can be down $1.50 and equity futures are off 100 points for the Dow, and you know what kind of day it's going to be for the grains. Instead, we're seeing prices rally and hold some strength here and provide producers with some better marketing opportunities than we once had.
It's nice to visit with you again. Thanks for coming our way.
Thanks so much.
Joe Camp with AgriVisor.
We are about 3 minutes away from news time with Susan Berkus here on WGN Radio. We are about 2.5 minutes away now from opening the farm gates at the Lindale Holstein Farm, operated by Dale and Linda. And so we'll be there about 8 o'clock. Look forward to seeing you. The National FFA Foundation did something I like this week. At the end of June, Dr. Dwight Armstrong will retire as chief executive officer of the National FFA Organization and Foundation, but his legacy in ag education and FFA will live on in a newly created endowment called the Dwight Armstrong Legacy Endowment. During Dwight's 7-year tenure with the organization, he oversaw an era of dramatic growth and success. The organization achieved an all-time record-high membership in FFA of 629,000, and also under Dwight's leadership solidified close collaboration and complementary strategic direction for both the National FFA Organization and the National FFA Foundation. So congratulations to the foundation for establishing the Dwight Armstrong Legacy Endowment for FFA. And in addition to June Dairy Month breakfasts, this is the 50th anniversary year of World Dairy Expo. This year, October 4 through 8 in Madison. And as the official kickoff to the 50th anniversary, a commemorative painting was unveiled last Tuesday at the summer board meeting, and Friends of Expo Volunteer Picnic, hosted by VitaPlus Corporation, the painting completed by artist Larry Schultz of Sunny Beach Farm Studio, saw the painting, and it sort of brings all of the elements of World Dairy Expo together. And prints can be ordered from the 50th anniversary page on the World Dairy Expo website at worlddairyexpo.com. Look forward to putting one of those on the wall in my house. So anyway, that's our time on this Saturday morning. Max and I thank you for joining us. We look forward to these opportunities to talk the food and agriculture business that we do here every Saturday morning.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.